Welcome to Unbreak My Chart, the podcast that tapes the top 10 and talks about it at school the next day. I'm Fraser McAlpine, and unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond our control, not only are we not able to bring you the Song of the Summer results in this podcast, it will be coming in the very next one, but Laura's not here either, and as her proxy and replacement, we've got John Allison. Hi, John.
Hi, Fraser.
Where's Laura?
Laura's off being important in the West Country and cannot be bothered at this time, so I've stepped in as her able lieutenant.
That's very kind of you. John, if you are unable to place him, is also the chap that designed the Unbreak My Chart logo. He's a superb comic artist and a maker of charts. You make an excellent end of year album roundup, and whenever we've had fairly long music conversations, at some point you will always come back around to the idea that music should be organised into charts, which is, I think, quite a strong belief of yours, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I've been making charts as long as I've been listening to the charts. I think I was hypnotised by the idea of putting things into order, and ever since, I've been making lists. I used to fill a whole diary with charts every week, but then I was a lonely boy, like the Andrew Gold song.
This is vital, because we need people who think that not only are able to think that charts are, you know, an important way of categorizing music, but also firmly aware that what they're doing is profoundly ridiculous.
Yeah, I knew what I was doing was transgressive, Fraser, but it didn't stop me. I just kept going, and I'm still doing it 29 years on.
So let's crack on with this week's top 10, because you've had something of a crash course on stuff that Laura and I have been talking about week on week for ages now. It's a slightly boring top 10 this week. It's dominated by blokes, with the exception of Ariana Grande. But it's a momentous occasion, and one that I'm definitely sorry that Laura's not here to see. In the history of Unbreak My Chart, this is the first top 10 that doesn't contain any songs by Ed Sheeran, unless you count Strip That Down by Liam Payne, which was written by Ed Sheeran, but he's not, his voice, you know, is not the lead voice on any of the songs in the top 10. Shape of You has fallen out of the top 10. It's a momentous day.
I'm very sad about this, because I love Shape of You. I love hearing it everywhere, and I certainly love how catchy it is. I think it's a tragedy, and maybe perhaps listeners will go out and stream it, you know, non-stop overnight, and we'll get it back in the charts again, get it back in the top 10.
I mean, if they're going to do that, I would urge them strongly to stream Bad Liar by Selena Gomez first, because that's a better song, arguably, and B, it never even got into the top 20, I don't think.
Currently mired in the middle 50s, I think.
And that's with the video having come out. People were being really nice this week, actually. I should thank everybody that tweeted me to say, because they know, you know, Unbreak My Chart listeners are very aware that I'm particularly fond of that song. And they were tweeting to say, the video's out, you should see the video. Oh, no, hang on, you don't like videos. And they're not sure what to do. And I have to say that even though a lot of people said it was a really charming and sweet video in which Selena Gomez plays all the parts, I just couldn't take the risk that it would stain the music with the visuals, and in some way that I couldn't break the two things apart, because I've had such fun with that song.
Fraser, you and I are at opposite ends of the scale here, because I, as a, you know, long-term watcher of the chart show on ITV, I get a certain thrill from seeing the video for even new songs where I really have no connection to them. Often it'll kind of plug the emotional gap that's missing by not being a teenager anymore, just seeing how they've chosen to interpret it. You know, I can imagine it being on the chart show. I try to imagine that it's, you know, 11:45 in the morning and that I really want it to finish, so just in case, you know, the new one by My Bloody Valentine is on, and then it just takes me somewhere that I wouldn't be otherwise.
I mean, I agree, it does definitely do that, but I always feel like it's a handrail. Now, this is quite a deliberately obtuse, arm-folded, old man-ish observation that it is that, but there was a point at which every new song that came along, the song was being spoiled by the video, and I made a decision, and it hasn't really hurt me. I've not seen a great deal of Lemonade, for example, but I still know it's a really good album, and the music is still as powerful as it is if you don't see Beyonce walking around in a fur coat holding a baseball bat.
Was there a point where videos got out of hand for you, Fraser? Was there a point where it was okay, sort of around 1987, you were fine with it, and then around 1995 you thought, no, this has gone too far now, these videos are too literal or too, you know, arty?
I mean, it's much more recent than that. It was Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball. I've sort of talked about this before, but the video to that is just such a gross misrepresentation of what that song is about.
I don't know, Fraser. I think the video is now has been part of the modern pop conversation for so long that to disregard it is to disregard half the song. I mean, maybe that's controversial, but I think when Miley was licking the hammer in that video, she meant it.
It's certainly a legitimate point of view. It's not the point of view that I hold.
No, Fraser, it's fine. You stick to what you want. You stand at the side of the dance floor with all the other cool kids with your arms folded. The rest of us will be in the middle just flailing around.
I'm actually dancing, you rotten swine. I am dancing my bum off and it's you cool kids are all dazzled by the idiot box in the corner. See what positions we've been forced to take in this non-argument, John. That's not what you think. This isn't what I think.
I want Laura
back.
Yeah, it's bound to be worse. I apologise, Fraser. I've come into your house and I've made a mess already.
Totally fine. Let's just do what we came here to do and put it all behind us. So, this week's top 10. At number 10 is Attention by Charlie Puth. I just want attention. You don't want my heart. Baby, you just hate the thought of me with someone new, huh? Yeah, you just want attention. I knew from the start. Now, this was the topic of an email that we received from Helena, which reads, "There's something that nags at the back of my mind each time I look at the charts and see one name in particular, Charlie Puth. I don't know if either of you are aware of this, but back before Charlie Puth was mega famous and signed to a major record label, he had a YouTube channel where he posted sketches, parody songs and beatbox covers. As time went on, he started to post more serious content in the form of original and cover songs, and I believe he eventually made private or deleted his older content. Aside from feeling very weird when people talk about Charlie Puth the pop star, because when I was 15 he was Charlie Puth the funny guy off YouTube, I find it very interesting how at one point he decided to definitively distance himself from his earlier, more whimsical material. Obviously and understandably, he grew out of that kind of content, but the 1984 style eradication of it intrigues me. So, with that in mind, what do you think of pop stars covering up their possibly embarrassing earlier work? Especially with the role the internet now plays in fame, the impossibility of completely eradicating something from the internet once it's been uploaded can lead to some interesting discoveries. It certainly can make pop stars seem much more vulnerable and human, or at least deliver some funny and cringeworthy findings." That's a fantastic email. Thank you, Helena. First and foremost, I'd like to reply by saying the idea of a YouTuber writing a song with a chorus that goes, "You just want attention," is hilarious. Just about as funny as any pop star choosing to do the same thing. You are the pot and you are calling the kettle black. What do you think about that? What do you think about people deleting their own clear attempts at fame once they've made it famous, John?
Well, as someone who put his first sort of creative work as a cartoonist online 20 years ago when the internet was very new, and I have to live with it, I can't delete it, because people will say, why did you delete it? It's a huge thing to go back and wipe out your history. It's a big thing if you've produced work as a child essentially, and then as an adult it's still up there. You know, you're bound to be embarrassed by it. You haven't got any remove. So I can understand why he did it, but you're just going to take stick for it. You might as well own it, because it's still you when it comes down to it. You know, it's only daft stuff, it's not bad stuff for Puth.
Yeah, and I wonder as well, I was used to the way that the PR machine around pop stars will take up the cause of tidying up what looks like an embarrassing past in a way that possibly doesn't have a great deal to do with what the artist wants. So we used to receive press releases for certain acts, and if their first single hadn't done very well but had definitely been released, they would say, "And now really exciting, so-and-so is releasing their debut single." And you'd be like, this isn't their debut single. In no sense is this the debut single. There was a single out before. It didn't do as well as you hoped, but you can't pretend it didn't happen. And I think that's something that happens in PR quite a lot. It's just like, well, let's just not mention it, and maybe we'll tidy it up. And if you act as if something never existed, you never really have to have that conversation.
Oh, sure. Just don't apologise. Just don't apologise for it. If you're going to do it, just say, that's my old work, putting it in a drawer. Let's face it. I mean, Lana Del Rey's career is built on the skeletons of about 20 different identities she had before she was Lana Del Rey. And nobody thinks anything of it. You know, nobody talks about that really, except, you know, wonkish pop nerds like us.
We should be venerating people who do change. Because, I mean, think about David Bowie, the most, you know, credited with changing pop star that there's ever been. If he had deleted the Laughing Gnome, he would have presumably felt a little bit happier about it, because people used to bring it up whenever there was a vote for which David Bowie song he should play at any gig. Inevitably, there'd be hordes of Boaty McBoatface people trying to vote for the Laughing Gnome.
Oh, sure, of course, because people are nuisances, Fraser. They're terrible nuisances.
They are. But ultimately, people will find that stuff out and they will go, well, even if you've deleted it, David Bowie, play the Laughing Gnome. And if he can put up with having the Laughing Gnome on his own back catalogue and wear that with a certain amount of grace, then Charlie Puth's got nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
Okay, at number 9 is Slow Hands by Niall Horan.
It's weird to think this and another song later have probably outperformed Harry Styles in terms of chart longevity. They've gone down more traditional paths and had more successful results, and Niall's holding on still in the top 10, whereas Harry's, you know, sliding out of the top 40.
Okay, moving on. At number 8, There's Nothing Holding Me Back by Shawn Mendes. Oh, I've been shaking, I love it when you go crazy. You take all my inhibitions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my reputation. Manipulate my decisions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. Number 7, I'm the One by DJ Khaled, featuring Justin Bieber, Quavo, Chance the Rapper, and Lil Wayne.
It's an overstuffed kebab of a song. I have nothing else to say about it.
Number 6 is Mama by Jonas Blue, featuring William Synge. I've looked it up. You pronounce it Synge. Now, William is another YouTuber made good, just like Justin Bieber, and he's also a former star of The X Factor, just like One Direction, although William's X Factor was in Australia. So, I mean, ultimately, John, the point that we made earlier on about watching videos or whatever, I know I'm out of step with the entire world on this one, because, oh my God, all the pop stars made videos before they even made music.
It's interesting that we still talk about people coming out of reality TV or coming out of YouTube, because I think at this point it's like saying Victoria Wood, the comedienne, came out of New Faces. So how on earth did she become, you know, one of the greatest comic voices Britain ever had? I think this is just the channel that everything will emerge from until a new one appears. It's just another opportunity to be famous in a very crowded entertainment field.
It's more interesting in a way when people don't come through those channels, and then you're starting to wonder, well, is it the more traditional way that people used to come through, where record companies are auditioning or putting together bands or you know, even going out and seeing bands and signing them up? Because there does seem to need to be, whereas before you'd maybe A&R men were going to look for bands that had a real cult following in, you know, venues. Now it's YouTube followers and all of that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the process of finding or talent sifting is any radically different.
I think because the music industry has less money now, because of, you know, the drop off of CD sales, there isn't the same money for A&R. You can't go out, send people out night after night on expenses and taxis to go and shower bands with drinks, when you can sit in your office, watch 20 different YouTube artists in a day and work out who's good. You've saved so much money just by doing that. The manpower alone, or woman power, is so much less. So it's really, I think it's partly just an economy of scale.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. We'll move on and talk about the only new song in this week's chart, and unfortunately it's not new enough for us to have not already discussed it, and that's To You by David Guetta featuring Justin Bieber. Speak for my heart when it comes to you. Now, speaking of videos, there are two versions of the video to this song. One in which Victoria's Secret models lip sync the whole song whilst wearing Victoria's Secret clothes in a moment of total brand synergy. and another in which the same thing happens, but the models are just wearing generic sexy clothes and it's unbranded. Now, bearing in mind, we're basically fine with YouTubers, we're fine with TV talent shows. Is it possible to consider anything like this as some form of selling out? Are we in any way interested or pulled, or is it even noteworthy that there is such commercial brand synergy there? There's definitely something that's a little bit icky about it, but the video itself isn't. It's not like it's blurred lines.
No, the video itself is quite chaste. I think it fits with the. Well, I should say I've never really considered Victoria's Secret as a brand or anything else. And then I was at Luton Airport a month or so ago, and there was only one seat in the place. And this is true, outside the Victoria's Secret shop. And I was right opposite the big screen. And I watched as an endless parade of these kind of American, Amazon, collegiate, very cheerful models stomped towards me down the runway, kissed, blew a kiss, and turned away. And after this had been going on, I was sitting there for about 15 minutes, and I began to feel like I was being attacked. It was like wave upon wave. It was a bit like Galaxians or something like that, Space Invaders. And so I feel now that I know the Victoria's Secret's models very well. And so watching this video gave me a certain amount of, you know, unease. But I think these corporate tie-ins, it's shameless now. It would have been a big thing even 10 years ago. Now it's like, well, there you go. It's a way to get women and men to watch your video. The, you know, Bieber's got a big following with, you know, girls, gay men, and various other communities, but I don't think straight men give a flying fig for the most part about Bieber. Well, they certainly give a fig about this video because it's eye-popping.
Okay, so moving on, at number four, we have Strip That Down by Liam Payne featuring Quavo. Do you feel the same as well? You know I used to be in 1D, now I'm a freak. People want me for one thing, that's not me. I'm not changing the way that I used to be. I just wanna have fun and get rowdy. One coke and Bacardi, sipping lightly. When I walk inside the party, girls on me. F1 type Ferrari, six kiss me. Girl, I love it when your body grinds on me. Oh, yeah. Baby, oh. You know I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me. Baby, now there's a lot of people in the crowd, but only you can dance with me. So put your hands on my body and swing that crown for me. Baby, you know I love it when the music's loud, but come and strip that down for me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, strip that down, bro. Love when you hit the ground. Yeah, 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 yeah. I feel about the same about it as Laura does, really. You know, it makes my skin crawl, and it doesn't make me want to sip a Bacardi lightly. I would never probably even look at Bacardi now. It's soiled Bacardi for you.
No more Bacardi for Johnny.
And number three is Unforgettable by French Montana featuring Sway Lee. Now, of all the songs in the top 10, only two, as I mentioned before, are unaffiliated with either reality TV or YouTube. Of those two, Ariana Grande built her pop career off the back of Disney TV, so there is the TV jump across, making French Montana and Sway Lee the realest, in inverted commas, performers in the whole top 10. You can ask the question of whether it matters. We've sort of talked about it a bit, and, you know, clearly it doesn't. But it's, in, you know, to the point where the top 10 is down to only one artist that didn't make the leap from visuals into sound.
Yeah, absolutely. But Unforgettable, it's a genuine organic hit, I think, in the truest sense. It's come out of a big organisation. It comes out of Bad Boy Entertainment. You know, it's hardly a scrappy little contender. But it does represent, you know, a certain. If we're looking at realness, and I don't like to look too hard for realness these days. I think it's a dirty word, but it probably is about as real as it gets in this top 10.
Yeah, it's interesting because ultimately the thing that we pointed out with Despacito, which is further up the chart, shall we say, was that. The narrative that was spun around it was that Justin Bieber had heard this great song and had decided to add his own voice to it and therefore help it achieve crossover in the rest of the world, as if it was that plucky young upstart that was doing well in only one small corner of the world and he'd bring it across. Now that narrative is partly true, but also Despacito had reached a billion plays on YouTube before Justin Bieber released his version. And actually, these narratives are really difficult to sustain in terms of David and Goliath. You know, it's all about how big your audience is. And ultimately, what you're saying, which I think is really true, is that the effect of charts is diminished when actually you can just say, yeah, okay, fair enough, we're not eligible for the British charts with our song. But oh my God, look, 2 billion people have played it. And look, you know what else? Those plays on YouTube have a revenue stream that comes back to us. I find that it's difficult to mind that we're not in the UK top 10 with our new song.
Exactly, exactly. The charts are global, really. In terms, that's why they look the way they do, which is something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And, you know, Despacito is a good example. You know, Justin Bieber's management, heard it and decided that they wanted to be on it. It doesn't ultimately represent any kind of like magic happening. It's a very savvy business move made by very savvy business people.
And what's always been interesting about the music industry is that that savviness doesn't necessarily stand in the way of things being artistically satisfying.
Absolutely not. No. I think it's at the, you know, I think Sven Jarlies and management shenanigans are absolutely at the heart of rock and pop music. I think they're what the engine that has driven it forward since Tim Pan Alley and probably before then.
This sort of casts what we've just said into a whole new light, actually, because at number two is One Last Time by Ariana Grande. Now, Ariana Grande is currently, I would say, standing at the apex of all of these arguments, because she is at one and the same time a product of what would be considered to be not real promotion. She also, due to circumstances beyond her control, is riding a wave of popularity that is based on the realest possible emotions that you could imagine. And it's the right song to do that. So artistically, it's satisfying, as well as being the song of a particular moment, you know, a context that's been entirely imposed on the music that wasn't there when people wrote it. So it's not been Svengali in a way, but obviously when it was originally made, it will have been to start off with. So she's really in the centre of this total cyclone of pop happenstance.
Absolutely, yeah. It just goes to show, it doesn't matter how fake something is, so many things come out of these, you know, it's show business. It's what happens to a song once it's kind of, you know, got free of that show business. They, you know, it's like Somewhere Over the Rainbow, her other hit way down the line, you know, the storied history of that song. I find it interesting that the song that we would traditionally associate with tragedy is much lower down the charts, and this one of her, you know, contemporary songs is the one that's captured people. I think that's really interesting.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah, I thoroughly expected Over the Rainbow to be at number one because of that context, but it is not. This week's number one, which was last week's number one, and the number one of the week before that, it is Despacito by Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, and Justin Bieber. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo en las paredes de tu laberinto, y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. Now, John, you've looked over the entire top 10, and I understand that you have something to say.
Well, I've looked over the whole chart, and I've looked over the charts since streaming began today, because I was called in at last minute and I didn't want to disappoint. And I've come to the conclusion that the charts need attention. I think that, to be honest with you, what the charts do now does not serve the recording artists or indeed the music industry particularly well. And if you like, I will take you through how I would fix it.
I'm agog. I'm all ears.
Right, Fraser, what's the most important number in the charts? Number one. So at the moment we have this strange fudged system where Spotify has it, you know, how many plays is it that you're allowed, and that counts as a play? Is it 5 plays? Is it 10 plays? And which means that essentially 1% of music fans now control the whole chart, because it's only like the super players, if you will, who control the chart. And it also favours larger artists because they have more fans, so their songs will then swamp the charts. So I came up with a system, Fraser, that would fix this, and I'll take you through it if you like. So all that counts is one, number one. One stream per person, that's all you ever get that counts towards the chart. It's the same as a purchase. As soon as you've played a song from start to finish, or let's just say until like 1:30, that's it. So one play, one download, one physical purchase are all worth the same thing, and you can only do it once. Songs can only be in the charts for 12 weeks and then they're out. Your chart career is over, because that's pretty much as long as any chart single lasted prior to non-physical formats entering the chart. And finally, you're only allowed to nominate one single from an album at a time to be the single, because it's a singles chart.
No, I completely agree. That last one is superb. I like the idea of using your vote for a song. So you vote for your song once.
Because the whole chart now, like all the things that the charts were set up against was, in this country anyway, was payola. It was against chart rigging, buying loads of copies in a single shop. It was against radio play, because radio play couldn't be used to affect like the proper charts, the Top of the Pops charts.
Yeah, yeah.
But now we have a system where we've gone from you can't use any drugs at the Olympics to you can use every single drug to try and win, which simply means that the top 1% of artists have gamed the system and can control the whole chart. So I've recompiled the top 40, taking out multiple songs by artists. The most popular one is number one, and anyone who was over 12 weeks.
Okay.
And of the top 100, there are 47 singles left, and many artists have achieved top 40 positions, who, including your favourite, because if we look, Selena Gomez as Bad Liar, which I believe is a song you quite enjoy, Fraser,
like
is number 31 on the charts. It's gone up. It's done very well under my system, and I believe that's not reason for you to endorse it, Fraser.
I wholeheartedly endorse it. I'm slightly disappointed that even with you quote-unquote doctoring the figures, Bad Liar is still only in the top 40, but I'll take it.
But when it was higher, Fraser, when it initially entered, it was when Sheeran dominated, so it would probably have gone in the top 20, gained additional airplay from local radio stations, which would have carried it up much higher. It would probably be number one by now, as far as I can work out.
If there was any justice in the world. Okay, yeah. Well, and are there any other surprising results from having recalibrated the charts? Who's at number one? I presume it's still Despacito.
It's still the same. In fact, it doesn't really affect the chart that much. It doesn't actually sort of cripple many artists who would otherwise have done well. There's only one song that leaves the top 10, which is the Ariana Grande single, ironically, at number 2, which probably would have meant that Somewhere Over the Rainbow, being the only available single, would have been number 2, because people's money would simply have gone there. So that's fine. I don't think there's any injustice served there. Little Mix get in the top 10 because of that. And there are a few outliers who now rise, like Hailee Steinfeld, the actress singer from Big Little Lies. Her excellent single enters the chart. Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, enters the singles chart for, I think, the first time only on his own. So that's his first top 40 hit. So really, I don't see how anybody loses from this system. And also, there's loads more spaces in the chart, which means that more artists and more nimble artists, because you've only got 12 weeks, would be able to chart. So I think if I'm going to go down, knock on the door of the official charts company on Monday and see what they think of this, and I have a feeling they'll hoist me shoulder high.
I think they probably will. Can you fold in YouTube into this? Because that seems to be a battleground that has been specifically avoided.
Well, YouTube's a tricky one. And when I looked at it, partly because the play counts at the moment we're looking at, they'd have to break it down by IP number to work out, because there's no user account. So, or most, a lot of people won't be logged in when they're watching. So you wouldn't know what country people were watching from. So it would take a new infrastructure. So I've just based this on Spotify, really. But, you know, if you want to talk to the boys at Google, Get down Old Street, have a word, Fraser. That's fine. We'll do that. We'll make this a double attack, two pronged attack.
Yeah, well, I think if we're going to recalibrate, we may as well go the whole hog. And I think it's a matter of some importance that you throw in listening figures from people who are listening.
All we've got really at the moment is a chart that's a bit like the Premier League, and it's a bit like everything else, where the big have got so big that they dominate everything, and they can't help but dominate it, you know. And so it's very hard for anyone to even get a toehold.
Now, the only note of caution I would sound is that democracy's not been terribly kind to us recently, John. Are we going to end up with a hung chart?
We could end up with a hung chart. But the thing is, I don't remember the charts ever reflecting 100% of what I liked. If I liked 12 songs on the chart when I was 14, I was delighted. I was running home. I was Sunday night was like a dream. So if we can get a chart where a Calvin Harris single that is, you know, patently excellent is able to at least get to number 22 and not number 40, I'll take that as a win.
Okay, last question. Would your system guarantee that Gorky Zygotic Monkey, the band who've had the most singles to go to just outside the top 40 in chart history, would have that their record would be very different now?
I have a feeling that it would ensure that Gorky's Zygotic Monkey will be able to get to number 41 in perpetuity. I don't think I can guarantee any more than that.
Well, that's okay. I'm sorry to hear you say that. But otherwise, it sounds like a wonderful idea. Okay, now it's new releases time. It's worth noting that the past week has seen an exceptional deluge of new material from interesting people, and all of it is worth your consideration to a greater or lesser degree. There's new records from The Horrors, Queens of the Stone Age, Rihanna with DJ Khaled, Big Boy, Paris, Fleet Foxes, Ride, Goldie, Dizzy Rascal, George Ezra, everything. The Katy Perry album came out, Calvin Harris has got new stuff out, Coldplay have got new stuff out, Beth Ditto from The Gossip's got stuff out, Shania Twain, etc., etc. And John, you've listened to all of it, haven't you?
Every last song, and I love them all. They're incredible.
So, first of all, we're going to be discussing the new record by Calvin Harris featuring Pharrell Williams, Katy Perry and Big Sean, and it's called Feels. Still a kiss, a little souvenir. Can I steal it from you? To memorize the way you shock me. The way you move it here. Just want to feel it from you. So that's Feels, dispensing with modernity there. It's a relatively pure reggae song. It's not reggaeton. It doesn't have that ton suffix. It doesn't have any house elements. It's slightly more 10cc reggae than it is Bob Marley reggae, but still. And even Big Sean's rap section, which just becomes another one, bites the dust for a second there, feels kind of deliberately old school. The only problem I have with it is I have to admit that I find the way that Katy Perry sings Don't Be Afraid to Catch Feels exceptionally blank and really, really irritating for all that. And it's really annoying because I do often find myself thinking that folk songs or folk-derived modern music should try and incorporate the language of modern everyday life.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It feels wrong, but it's right, you know. Like, we absolutely... this is two men in their 40s talking. To us, the word feels is... It feels awful. It's like swallowing a jar full of nails saying the word feels. But at the same time, I think it should be in pop. It absolutely should. The argot of the day should be front and centre in pop music, because that's what pop music is.
It just needs to be sung better. That is proper dad talking. I'm aware of that.
All I was going to say was I love this single. I've loved all the Calvin Harris singles. I think they are the singles of the year. I played them back to back today and I just couldn't... I thought they were unimpeachable. And this, although, yes, it's light reggae, arguably has the whiff of Maxi Priest about it, I still think it's just beautiful. Not beautiful in the sense of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but beautiful in the sense that it is a beautifully constructed song. Calvin Harris is a master at this sort of thing. He's going for that. It's the only land grab I've heard for what Daft Punk did with Get Lucky, really. Him and an occasional Bruno Mars single. They're the only people really going for pop in that 70s, 80s sense and actually finding it there rather than just finding the sounds and applying them to contemporary forms.
He's so adept, isn't he? He's really, really skilled at what he throws
sure.
in.
And they've not done that well, these singles. That's the sad thing. I think they all sound like massive hits to me, but I think one got to number 10, another did slightly worse, one peaked at about number 40. It's like, these are great songs. What's going on? It was hearing that made me want to rebuild the charts. I was just furious. I was seething that one had only got to number 40.
Okay, so another new song that's out this week is The Man by The Killers. I'm the man, come around and not that you break. You can't break me. Oh, hello. Has indie gone entirely pop now? After Arcade Fire taking up Keane's mantle, now we have Disco Killers, which I have to say suits them rather well from where I'm sitting. Not least because this isn't a slavish Get Lucky ripoff, which everybody was doing immediately after Get Lucky came out. It's more in the spirit of early Duran Duran with a touch of musical theatre, because it's got loads of choral bits, and some dirty, dirty bass. I'd have this as my most listened to song of the week if someone else had not made an even more impressive comeback for me. John, what do you think?
Well, Fraser, I didn't love it as much as you did. I could hear three things while I was listening to this. I could certainly hear Duran Duran. I could also hear the ghost of U2's Discotheque when stadium rockers head for the dance floor. But I could, which I think, I don't think you can get away from Discotheque. I think U2 are such a template and we ignore them at our peril. And also I could hear Grace Jones. It was Brandon Flowers was singing when it should have been Grace Jones, but the bass is great actually, and if it had been Grace Jones singing, I think I would actually have liked it a lot more. But ultimately, the Killers are a band who hate each other, and every time I hear one of their records, I just think these guys hate each other.
So they're playing as viciously as they can. It's the syndrome that existed between Sting and Stuart Copeland of the Police, where Stuart Copeland had F off UC written on his individual tom-toms.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Yeah, the great rock and roll tradition of hatred.
Speaking of hatred, the other song that's out this week that we're going to discuss is Creature Comforts by Arcade Fire, and it sounds like this. So at this point, I'm going to cede the floor to you, John. What did you think?
Well, Laura Snapes, who you may know from this podcast, hates the Arcade Fire. I think she detests them both as people and as musicians. And she'll play me the songs with a look and say, listen to this, John. It's awful. Listen to the words. They're horrible. And I listen to it and I nod because I want her approval. And then I'll hear the song again. And in fact, I sat, she played this to me and we'd listened to the lyrics and gone, oh, this is just nonsense, because it is nonsense. It's just words for words' sake, and if you scrutinise them, they're fairly wretched. And I played it again, but my attention drifted while I was listening, and I was halfway through and my head was nodding. I was going, my God, this is great. Oh no, I'm listening to the Arcade Fire, and exactly the same thing had happened with Everything Now, where I thought, oh no, this is sort of vapid, isn't it? And then all of a sudden I was like, Everything Now, oh, Everything Now. And it was exactly the same with this. I think, unfortunately, I think they've got a knack. I think they know what they're doing, which is what really upsets me, because I don't think they deserve the knack. I think a better person deserves the knack than the Arcade Fire. But they are kind of like, they're always the chart canary in the mine for me, because their first album, which was not the easiest record to listen to, you know, to a mainstream ear, 4 hit singles on it. The second album, none and never again. That's kind of the end of the charts as we knew them in our youth, the Arcade Fire. So I always see them as like, and the fact that they remain successful, I always think, could they ever have a hit again? If they ever had a hit again, it means the old days are coming back. So I kind of want the canary in the coal mine to survive, even though they are not the best people in the world.
It's funny how the more they turn towards pop music, the less pop music is interested. So this is a kind of New Order-ish song, and it's all synth pop, and it's, we've got a great synth refrain, here it is, again and again, and some awful lyrics about self-harming and teenage girls that I wouldn't even give them the dignity of repeating them, because,
oh, they're awful. I mean, I'm not a lyric listener, to be honest with you, but you can't ignore them. I mean, I don't pay attention to lyrics, and often I don't even interpret them as the correct words that they are until it's pointed out to me what they are. But yeah, these are nasty. It's nasty if you actually work it out. And the fact that Regine is kind of singing along, but she doesn't sound like she's enjoying herself. She sounds in genuine pain on this record.
So, moving on from songs that we don't like to songs that we really do like, John, what is your most streamed song of the week?
It is Yuk Fu by Wolf Alice, which was out on Friday, and Wolf Alice, a band I always thought of simply as Enemy cover fodder, but this is such a great, exciting, stroppy single. Again, I wish it was in the charts. I wish it was sandwiched between two very anodyne dance pop hits, because it would sound incredible. It's everything I want a record like this to be, a classic indie chart record. It sounds great. It's exciting. And I just want to be excited when I hear a record. Now, I don't want to have the jaded appetites of an aging major general. I want to still be excited about pop records, and I was excited about this one. I'm gonna be cruel, but you're really grinding. I'm not a fool, but I have a rage and it's blinding. I feel it coming.
Funny you mentioned that. With, you know, we talked about the chart show earlier on, the ITV chart show, and obviously our logo is based on the ITV chart show, because this song sounded to me like those number six entries where you'd never heard of the band, but what they were doing was screamy and loud and vivid on a Saturday morning, and you're just like, well, I know what I'm doing for the rest of the day. I'm going out to buy that record because my day has been turned upside down.
Exactly. You wanted a little bit of what you knew. You wanted a little bit of the melody that you understood as a pop fan, and then something that you didn't understand that made it 10 times more exciting. That was the feeling. That was the feeling of those records, you know, the mixture of both of craft and something that really wasn't craft, that was, you know, something that you felt like you could do. It spoke to you personally.
And also, it's riddled with swear words, and that's always really exciting.
Oh, I love a bit of transgressive swearing on a record. I think that makes it all the better, yeah.
Which, I mean, it does lead me into my most streamed song of the week. I have to apologise before we play this. My most streamed song of the week, if you go off and listen to the proper version of it, contains quite a lot of offensive thoughts. It's Dizzy Rascal and his new single, Space, which sounds like this. These MCs are looking like tappers. I pull the swine and their bodily gases. Roll with the rasses. Babylon's calling me. Nobody's fooling me. I do not roll with the masses. But big up the jungle is massive. I am not timid and I am not passive. Messing with me, you must be on some acid. Stumble the racket, I will get it right. All my problems disappear like it's magic. It'll be tragic. Ain't no point in playing it safe. Gotta know your role, better state your case. When it all falls down, better know your place. Just give me 3 feet and an ounce of space. Now, as you can hear, there's barely a beat, and the keyboard refrain is barely there either. But my God, it's a masterclass in what flow is, and when someone's putting words together and banging internal rhyme next to, you know, end of line rhyme, it's really, really brilliantly constructed verse. Dizzy's interesting because he's been both a Guardian approved poster boy for the authenticity of the grime scene, but he's also been a cartoon pop figure, and this is him basically being highbrow and coarse at the same time, which is also known as having your cack and eating it. And the rhymes sort of hit you in the face like punches in a Warner Brothers cartoon. They're just incredibly fast. And even though this isn't woke by any means, women are used as prizes, haters are marginalised using kind of a horribly ableist term, which I'm afraid I'm going to say in a minute. It's so brilliantly foul-mouthed and teenage, I just found it utterly adorable. So the line that really made me fall over laughing, and I'm literally just reading this out because it made me laugh, I do apologise, trigger warning, because of the ableist language, he says, "Why do they make me feel guilty for getting this money? Like my soul's in tatters, sitting here trying to realign my chakras, driving me crackers, you bloody spackers should get off my knackers." And at that point, I just thought, this is the best song I've ever heard. And I know. I should be deeply ashamed, but I just wasn't.
I don't think you should be at all, Fraser. He's only saying what people say. You know, he's an artist. He's not someone who needs to be held to a standard where, you know, you can take apart every word and say that's not a word you should use, because it's a word that people do use, and he's writing from that perspective, I think. Yeah, he's a genius. I think we'll still be talking about him, whatever he's doing, 20 years from now.
And that's all we have time for this week. John, thank you so much for standing in for Laura. I think normal service will resume next week, and we will be doing the Song of the Summer. So you still have an opportunity over the next couple of days to send in your Song of the Summer, and we're just going to do a great big wade through all of your suggestions. And thank you, sir, everybody that's already sent theirs in. It's going to be really good. The suggestions have been fantastic, and it's a testament to the pop nous and the intelligence and just general passion of everybody that listens to this podcast that we've had some fantastic ideas come through. Thanks for listening and subscribing. And unless anything major happens between now and the next podcast, just keep in touch via unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com. That's where you can send in your Song of the Summer suggestions. If you want to listen to any of the songs we discussed in the podcast, we'll put the best ones in our rolling Spotify playlist, which as ever is linked to in the show notes. We'd also love it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts, and thanks so much if you already have done so. It just helps us spread the word about Unbreak My Chart. You can find me on Twitter at @CSI_popmusic. John, do you want Unbreak My Chart listeners to find you on Twitter?
Absolutely, yes. You can find me on Twitter. I'm @BadMachinery.
Excellent. And Laura Snapes is Laura Snapes, and she will be here again next week. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.